Welcome to the Running in the Center of the Universe podcast. This is Ashlyn Dave. I'm your host, and I'd like to thank you for downloading the show. I got an interesting show this week. This is the week of April 3rd, 2009, and I've already done some running this week. I'm doing this podcast from inside. I've got three really good race reports I want to share with everybody this week, and I got these in while my computer was out for repair, and I saved them, and I wanted to share them. They're really good. They're from Todd Crash Crider, who ran the B&A Marathon on March 1st. The second one is from Rich of the Woodlands, Texas, who ran the Texas Independence Relay on March 8th. Or the weekend of March 8th, because it took them more than one day. And then I've got a half marathon report from the Shamrock Half from Dr. Smitty. And the cool thing is that two of these guys might end up showing up to run the Ashland Railroad Run this coming weekend, which I'll have a report on that next week. So let me just talk a little bit about my training real quick. I've been doing some 50-plus mile weeks. And that's pretty brutal. I can't imagine these people that run that for, you know, all the time. It's taking its toll on me. And I'm really looking forward to the taper period, which is in late April for me. I'm still training, still on track to run the May 2nd Sterling Gym 40-mile run as an ultra, and my mileage is at a point where I think I'm going to be okay. I'll struggle, but I think I'll finish. And this past weekend, I did probably one of the, other than running a marathon or running a 50K, I did probably one of the most insane things I've ever done. I ran a 24-mile training run on Saturday and then got up Sunday morning and knocked out another 8 miles. And I tell you, those first couple steps, maybe the first 5 minutes, I could just tell that my legs were so beat, but it improved, and you know, I took my 5 minute walk breaks every 25 minutes, and that's really what saved me. And I think it's a real good strategy to use, and I think I'm definitely going to be using that come May 2nd. So, well, anyway, this podcast is really not about me. It's about three guys that ran three incredible races, and so I want to share these race reports. And the reason for that is maybe somebody else can get some inspiration from the details that are packed in these race reports. Each of these runners, it's three different runners, three different races, three different reports, and each runner is talented in different ways. And there's none is any better or worse than the others. They just and they're all from different parts of the country, so it's kind of, well, I guess. I guess two of them are from the Virginia area and the one's from Texas. But anyway, let's talk about the Baltimore and Annapolis Trail Marathon, which Crash Crider did. And let me share his report with y'all. The race weekend starts off with a pretty decent drive upwards to Baltimore. Not that much traffic. Kids were being good. I was pleasantly surprised. The weekend had started well. We checked into a room at the Renaissance Hotel right smack in the middle of the Inner Harbor. Very convenient. We could walk to everything. Very clean, nice beds, nice sized room. I would recommend it to anyone. We then toured some of the malls, grabbed some lunch, and headed to our appointment at the Baltimore National Aquarium. The kids really loved this. I had to pull them out of there about 3 hours later. By this time it was dinner time, so we walked over to the ESPN Sports Zone. The food was okay, but the games were off the hook. I could spend weeks in that place, and who knew I was such a good air hockey player. Well, Todd, I'll say it, since you can't seem to run on a treadmill, so maybe you should take up air hockey. All right. Anyway, so our plan was to have the family just stay at the hotel, and I was to head to the marathon solo and then drive back to the hotel. It all worked out really well. I left the parking garage bright and early the next morning, and it was snowing. Everything was covered in white. I thought to myself, oh boy, here we go. I make it to Severna Park, Maryland rather easily. I didn't get lost, and that was a good thing. The packet pickup was actually inside the school's cafeteria, which was really nice. I was able to lay out all of my gear, out on the table, get situated, and suit up at the very last minute. I was there pretty early, and I got to talking to Marathon Maniac number 170. Something. Don't remember the exact number. This lady was as nice as she could be. She was smiling the whole time, and you could just tell that she was so happy to be there, getting ready to run the race. I would guess that she was about 60 years old, with hair halfway down her back. She was dressed in the brightest neon yellow that I've ever seen. Anyways, we got to talking, and she told me this was her 137th marathon, and she completed 25 of them last year alone. She also qualified for Boston twice last year. She said she was going to take it easy this year, run maybe only 10 marathons or so, which is amazing. So the race starts, and I take about 3 steps, and I could tell something just wasn't right. My left foot felt weak. I didn't have my normal push-off, and my right calf was tighter than I can recall it being. Did I have the wisdom to call it quits right then and there? Nope. But 2 miles in, my left foot was hurting. I kept saying to myself, just go a little bit further and your foot and calf will loosen up. I'm a big believer in positive thinking. Mile 7-ish is when things started to really go sour. My foot was hurting more and more, and my right calf, which is the same one I've had trouble with in every marathon, started twitching. At this point, I'm thinking, well, let me just get to the halfway mark and then I'll just finish there. Well, the first 12-plus miles are the same for both races, and this is one of the few races where they actually let a marathon-entered person finish the half distance and still be counted and scored in the half-marathon division. Well, by mile, what he's saying there is, in this particular marathon, if you want to stop, you just sign up, and if you want to stop at the halfway mark, then you can stop there, but if you're a marathoner. But if you're a half marathoner, you can't continue on and finish. You have to stop at the half marathoner. Anyway, by mile 10-ish, my left foot is really hurting. In all honesty, every step hurt. I knew I was in serious trouble, but at this point, there was no quitting. I only had 3 miles into the halfway mark. Well, these 3 miles are probably the most taxing mental miles that I've ever run. I debated in my head over and over and over, how would I feel if I only finished the half? How would I feel if I DNF'd? How would I feel if I finished the full? So I get to the 12.5-mile split off, and did I have the wisdom to take the turn? Nope. I was hell-bent and determined to finish what I started. About 200 yards or so past the turn off, I thought to myself, I would have never forgiven myself if I would have taken the easy way out. All the time, I felt like I made the right decision, although I would totally second-guess that thought about 100 times in the next 13.1 miles. Miles 14, 15, and 16 pretty much signaled the end of any so-called running form whatsoever. I'm pretty sure I looked like an alien with rabies plodding along the road. I was nursing both the left and right sides of my pace and stride, and they had pretty much fallen off the planet. I was doing the weeble wobble stride. I was still moving forward, though. I get to about the 18-mile mark, and I sit down and take a peek at my left foot. Purple and swollen it was. By this point, every step felt like fire. I knew it was broken then. I laced it back up and started shuffling along again. By this point, I'm getting passed by the entire field. Everyone was giving me the pity phrase of, you're doing great, man, keep it up. But for some reason, this irritated me to no ends. I thought to myself, just leave me the hell alone and let me do my thing. Some true hating going on there. Mile 21-ish is where I pretty much lost sensation altogether in my left foot. I could still feel it, but it was numb and traveling up past my ankle and into my leg. This actually made the finishing of the race somewhat bearable. By this point, my hammies and my quads were also feeling the alien stride effects, so they weren't feeling the greatest, really weren't feeling that good either. Miles 22, 23, and 24, more of the same. About 3/4 of the way into the 24th mile, my phone rings, and yes, I carry a cell phone. I'm a multitasker. On the phone was the famous podcaster Ashlyn Dave himself. What a treat. All the time, I was feeling pretty down until I got the call. In all honesty, I'm not really sure what we talked about. I just remember that he gave me some encouragement. I remember telling him that this is one lonely race. That's right. Just a little side note here. The back end, I ran the back BNA last year. The back end of that race, you are almost all by yourself because so many people quit at the halfway mark. It's mostly it's a half marathon, but anyway, all the halfers were done, and I was running the race solo with no crowd support whatsoever, and this was a big change from what I'm used to. I'm used to knowing everybody under the sun at various races that I enter. Anyway, the big thanks goes out to Dave. He helped me more than you know. I truly am a fan of yours. Feel free to use anything in your podcast. Well, Todd, I'm reading it verbatim, so I'm definitely using it all. So I finish off the final mile, and the announcer says my name coming down the home stretch. It felt good to hear Todd Crowder from Richmond, Virginia. Across the line, was given my medal, and I honestly shed a few tears because I was so glad to have made it. This was by far the toughest race or challenge that I've ever encountered during any race. It made my first two Richmond marathons seem like a walk in the park. So am I stupid for doing what I did? Yes. So am I happy for doing what I did? Yes. Would I recommend doing what I did to any of my friends or people that I coach? No. Anyways, anything can happen during a 26.2 miler, and that's why I'm starting to love the distance. Not real sure when my next one will be, but all I know is I can't wait. And then Todd went on to talk about how he has an appointment to go see a doctor. Well, I happen to know that Todd did recover, and I was around when Todd ran his first marathon in Richmond a couple of years ago, and this guy's tough as nails. I mean, I think he actually tore his calf muscle somehow and still finished. I think he just dragged his foot like the last 10 miles or something. Real tough guy. He's actually my first distance coach as an adult. And Todd, you've kind of created a monster. So anyway, congratulations on your finish. I appreciate the detailed race report. I'm very happy to share that with other people. And that's just a good example of how you can receive or you can experience a setback in a race. But if you're focused on accomplishing that distance, you know, without, you know, permanently injuring yourself. I mean, Todd wasn't going to permanently injure himself. He was hurt and he knew something was wrong, but he could still run and you know, he drove all the way up there, so he might as well do the distance. So Todd, man, thanks so much for sending that in. I'm sorry it took a whole month before I was able to get it out on the podcast. But I guess maybe I'll see you at the Ashland Railroad Run. Who knows? I'm not sure if I'll be able to get this podcast pushed out before then. But anyway, thanks a lot for the race report, man. Appreciate it. All right, the second race report is from Rich. And Rich has been a loyal listener to the podcast. He's one of the first listeners that I started corresponding with. And believe it or not, Rich, being from Texas and living down there, was actually in the Ashland area last week. He is taking a little bit of a tour of some colleges in reference to his kids. And apparently he drove through the center of the universe and because he was close enough. So I think he made a little run up here. And it was raining that day, and I emailed him back, and I told him, I said, well, you know, I run in the rain. I probably ran right past you. So anyway, Rich has got a great, great report of the Texas Independence Relay. And if you have never heard of that, you ought to check it out. I'll have a link on the site in the show notes for this thing. Apparently, it's in its second year. It's a 203.2-mile race and has a total of 40 legs. And it's obviously a relay, and if you've never done a relay before, it's really something to experience. I didn't do one that's at the magnitude of this one. I did a 24-hour relay with a team where we ran the same 5-mile loop through the woods for 24 hours. So we didn't have to have vehicle logistics or anything. But this thing that Rich did was pretty in-depth, and I'm going to read his report here and give you an idea of what the Texas Independence Relay is all about. Let's get started. And Rich, thanks for sending this in. I'm gonna share it with all the listeners here. I think it's a pretty good report. Okay, Rich writes, first, let me share some background on the race. The relay has a total of 40 legs. Honoring Texas independence, it starts in Gonzales, Texas, birthplace of the Texas Revolution. Loosely following the route of the independence fighters, it ends 203.2 miles later at the San Jacinto Monument in Houston, where General Sam Houston defeated the Mexican Army at the Battle of San Jacinto. Amidst cries of "Remember the Alamo" and "Remember Goliad." In 2007, the first relay was run with a start on Texas Independence Day, March 2nd. This year, on Saturday, March 6th, You know what? I think that might have been March 8th. Saturday, March 7th. I think March. Anyway, maybe I had the date wrong. This year on Saturday, March 6th, 158 teams took off to run the second Texas Independence Relay. Our team, the Raging Aging, running for the second year, was made up of 12 aging runners. As we were all over 40 and had a mix of 8 males and 4 females, we were entered into the mixed masters division. Although there are teams that attend from out of state, the majority of teams come from Texas. For this race, the governor of Texas, Rick Perry, had also entered a team called the Run Texians, named after the fighters of Texas independence. All right, the logistics. Once the first runner was off, the rest of us settled into our vehicles for the chase, an expedition and a minivan. Logistics becomes important in this race, and how the vehicles are set up is part of that. We had begun the day at 3:30 a.m., meeting at a local Walmart near our homes. From there, we had a 160-mile drive in the two vehicles to get to the start. From our experience last year, we had decided to make the expedition the active vehicle, always carrying the current set of runners, and the van the inactive vehicle, carrying the other six, allowing them to rest before they had to run. After about every six legs, we would reconfigure who was in each vehicle depending on who was slated to run. Each van had its own cooler with food, water, and Gatorade. Each vehicle also had a top luggage carrier where we could store our sleeping bags and other bags for the rest periods. Packing six people into either a minivan or an expedition does not leave a lot of room for bags. Once the excitement of the opening series of legs was passed and the first six runners had run and switched to the inactive van could go further down the course and find a place to hang out and rest, such as a park. There is usually about 4 hours in between the switches. Most of the teams follow a similar practice. The only time you do something different is overnight when the teams can either use a hotel room for some shut-eye or use a local school gym that the race director sets up for runners to let them shower and crash on the floor. The race. Using a staggered start system beginning at 6 a.m., each team starts about 4 minutes apart. Our team has start time of 7:23 a.m. The relay opens with a mile and a quarter mile prologue loop around the town that all team members run, and then the first runner takes off. It was overcast, about 66 degrees, and very windy at the start. The day progressed great. Our team members were running strong, and during most of the day we were overtaking slower teams. My first leg was number 6, a 4.12-mile segment straight down Texas Highway 90, starting from the Shiner Brewery, which has great local beer, Rich says, in Shiner, Texas. I started about 11 a.m. The temperature was in the high 70s and I had a crosswind. We had been fighting the headwind for most of the mornings, but I felt great and ran an average 9:22 mile passing four teams. Since it is not a closed course, you do need to be careful as you have traffic along the highway running about 60 miles an hour. The one bad thing that happened is that I developed a huge blister on my left foot. My next leg was number 16, a 5.87-mile segment, also pretty much straight down Highway 90, finishing in the town of Columbus, Texas. By this time, we were 74 miles into the run. I started about 6 p.m. as it was beginning to get dark. As it had gotten hot during the day, it was probably about 80 degrees when I started. As we were running along state roads and highways, rules required that we wear reflective belts, two hazard blinkers, and a flashlight, and I took off with all of it on. Between the blister, the earlier effort, and having been up since 2:30 in the morning, I was beginning to tire. I ran this segment in an average 9:56 pace. A short while after my second leg, six of us loaded into the inactive van and headed to get a burger and then go to Wallace, Texas Junior High School gym, which had been open to the teams to crash for a few hours and allow people to take showers. The next leg for me was going to be number 27, 6.52 miles, sometime in the middle of the night. The good news was that it was going to be my last leg for the race, so I had something to look forward to. I was able to rest for a couple of hours before we had to head back out at 12:30 a.m. to meet up with our other teammates. At leg number 24, the 116.5-mile mark, we took over and the other six runners went to the gym for their rest. We continued through the night. Sleep deprivation can do strange things to people. To us, we got pretty slap happy and were laughing our way along. Non-runners would probably think we were crazy, but we were having a great time. Leg number 27, which is 6.52 miles, came at what would have been 2:53 a.m., but since daylight savings began this night, we had moved the clocks ahead, so it was actually 3:53 a.m. Either way you look at it, it was the middle of the night. After making a quick right turn, it was a long 5.8 miles straight down the highway, making sure to avoid the early morning drivers coming from who knows where at that hour of the morning. I also had to watch out for roadkill on the shorter, and there was plenty of it. On the overnight segment, the vans shadow the runners to keep them in sight so they are safe. It was warm, 66 degrees, and very humid. I was tired, and I still had a very sore foot from the blister. I did the leg in an average 10:33 pace, struggling along the way, but I made it. Total miles run at that point for me was about 17.5 miles. Our van of overnight runners turned it back over to our teammates at leg 29 at about 5:30 a.m., and then we headed to IHOP for some breakfast. From there, we headed into downtown Houston to wait at the beginning of leg 36. We got there about 7 a.m., and for about an hour plus after getting there, the entire van just fell asleep right in our seats without moving. It must have been quite a sight for anyone walking by. We had about a four-hour wait while our teammates made their way along the various legs. It was here while we were waiting for our team, that Governor Perry's team caught up with us. They were a faster team, averaging 7:31 miles. He was a great sport, talking and having photos with most of the runners. We ended up staying fairly close to his team for the remainder of the race. He ran the last leg for his team, and it was quite a sight to see him running so hard. As Sunday warmed up into the 80s, our team kept at it. Our last three runners were blazing in spite of the temperatures and the fatigue. Our last runner, Sandra, had started the race on leg 1 and finished it for us on leg 40. We ended up finishing in 79th place overall, 5th in our division, in 30 hours, 11 minutes, and 18 seconds, averaging 8:55 miles. It was a terrific effort, and we had a fantastic time. Now, they finished 79 out of 158 teams. That was awesome, Rich. I mean, that was really good. Anyway, back to the story. I cannot say enough about how much fun a relay like this is. I happened to come across an article about the Texas Independence Relay from January, where Jay, the race director, likened the relay to a retreat. I think that sums it up well. In spite of the fatigue, I felt energized in the days following. I think the key is getting a group of very compatible people, as we will be spending a lot of time together in vehicles while wearing smelly clothes. Rich writes, we've already signed up for next year. The Raging Agent will run again. Well, Rich, that is a remarkable report. I really appreciate you taking the time to provide so many details, because I was very curious about how the relay worked. And you definitely didn't disappoint. And 30 hours, just over 30 hours to run, you know, 203 miles, that's not bad. I mean, you know, people run solo 100 milers in 24 hours. Of course, I know they slow down when you have fresh people to run. But running in the middle of the night is definitely difficult. I've done that once myself. And it's an interesting experience, especially after you've already run some. And anyway, Rich, can't say enough how much I appreciate the report. We'll definitely look forward to hearing about your next run. And sounds like you got quite a team there to do something each year. And if you ever back up this way, make sure you give me an email, and I'll run up. I'll meet you somewhere in town, and we can meet up. And once again, thanks for listening to the podcast, and thanks for providing the race report. The last one I've got is from Dr. Smitty, who ran the Shamrock Half, which was, I think, March 18th, I think. March 16th, maybe, March 15th. Anyway, he ran the Shamrock Half, and he's very fast. And I think I'm going to be running into Dr. Smitty at the Ashland Railroad Run. He's going to come up here. You might remember me talking about him. He provided me some good advice before I ran my first 50K. And I think he ran one in North Carolina. I can't remember the name of it, but that was his first one. And we shared some emails back and forth just about, you know, going past the marathon distance and this and that. But the half distance is a real good distance for him. And let me share his story. It's a little more brief than the others, but nevertheless, still very high quality. Dr. Smitty writes, hey Dave, I just listened to your latest podcast and I thought I'd add to the race reports. I was going to write sooner, but I got a bad case of the flu that I'm now just getting over. I should be great for the Ashland Railroad 10K next weekend. For the Shamrock half, I had an hour and 30 minutes goal in mind. My PR for the half was 132.40, and I had never trained specifically for a half. I just ran the halves as part of my training for full marathons. My mileage was almost as high for the half training, but my long runs were less. I did 3 16-milers and some shorter distances. I did a tempo run and interval training every week, so there was more speed work than I've ever done before. I felt great race morning. The weather was perfect for long distance running. It was about 37 degrees at the start. The first few miles went by pretty easy. I was going about a 6:55 pace, so I felt good. And that's right, y'all, 6:55 pace. That was what I had. Once we turned on the short drive, I knew this would be the toughest part of the race because it is a gradual uphill and there are no people to cheer you on. At about mile 5, I realized I hadn't put any nipple protection on. All I could think of was your video from Richmond with that guy finishing with the bloody spots. Luckily, mine never gave me any problems. Once we turned on Fort Story, I was feeling great. I took some Gatorade right past the 6-mile mark and I was averaging a 6:47 pace. And that is just incredible. We were starting the gradual downhill to the finish. Right at mile 7, I had this feeling like I was going to throw up. No stomach upset and no warning. I went to the side of the road and coughed a few times, but nothing. So I started running again, and a block later it happened again. Now I was getting mad. I either wanted to throw up and finish or have it quit bothering me. So I walked a little and decided to start running again. Now my average pace was up to 7:03. I felt pretty devastated because there was little chance I could finish in an hour and 30 minutes. I just kept running hard and I passed quite a few people. Luckily, no more stomach episodes. No more Gatorade for the rest of the race, though. When I got to the 10-mile mark, the race time was 1 hour and 10 minutes. If I could just run a 5K in less than 20 minutes to finish, I would reach my goal. But unfortunately, I couldn't run that fast. I finished in 1 hour, 30 minutes, and 30 seconds for an overall average of 6:54 pace. Even though I didn't reach my goal, I trimmed 2 minutes off my PR, which feels good. I know that I can run a half marathon in an hour and a half now if everything comes together good. I think I'll do more speed training when I train for my next full marathon also. I'm starting to feel like the half is my race of choice. I won't quit doing fulls, but it's nice to be able to drink a few beers after the race and still be able to walk the next day. I haven't decided which marathon to do in the fall, but I better start planning soon. Anyway, Dr. Smitty writes, I look forward to meeting you this weekend. Hopefully my fast time can translate into a good 10K. Keep up the great work on the podcast. Well, Dr. Smitty, I'll tell you, if you can run 13.1 miles at an average 6:54 pace, you might place at the Ashland 10K and walk away with some kind of award. So I'll email you. We'll definitely meet up and. I'm kind of honored that you're driving up for that race. It's probably just going to be just over 500 runners. We're keeping your fingers, keep your fingers crossed for great weather. But most of all, Greg, thanks so much for sending in the race report, taking the time to write that out. You sound like you're a real fast runner. If I could only run that fast, I'd tell you, my PR for the half marathon is just under 2 hours. I think 157, something like that, 158. So I'm much slower, but I can definitely go the distance. But it sounds like your speed work is really what did it for you. I wonder if I should do some of that. The reason I've shied away from some of the speed work is because it makes my knees hurt so much. And Ari, that has a blog, I think it's runanskyrun.blogspot.com, he told me that I was probably just running too fast. So I guess speed work is all relative anyway. If you're a slow runner, speed work is not going to... It's not sprinting, I guess. I don't know. I should probably look into it some, but it sounds like it really worked out for you. And I'm glad you didn't have any nipple problems, because that's really hard to, if you're drinking beers after the race and you got bloody nipples and you got your shirt all stained, it's kind of hard to walk around with a smile on your face. So I'm glad you didn't have those problems. And for any of you other guys out there, I'll make this plea every now and then. Take care of your nipples. If nothing else, you just don't want to have the embarrassment of bloody nipples when you're walking around after the race is over. Well, those were truly three great race reports, and sometimes I wish I could read them with a little more enthusiasm. I mean, they're excellent reports, and I guess I just don't have it in me. I tell you, there's a guy that does a podcast called Running Stupid, and he just talks with enthusiasm, and you know, compared to him, I'm pretty boring. But anyway, they were excellent, excellent run, race reports. Appreciate you guys sending them in, as always. And I guess I'll see some Tom or Todd and Dr. Smitty probably this weekend at the National Railroad Run. I did get a couple hits on the site here, comments I'll share. Oh, actually, I got a real nice iTunes. I got two nice iTunes reviews from March, and then I got one in two in March. One was from Waldo, who's also known as Ashland Bob. He's a good friend of mine that runs here in town. He had some really nice things to say on iTunes, and also got one from Shadwell. And he said, Ashland Dave rocks. Well, I think I know who Shadwell is, but for some reason it's slipping my mind who that is. I thought I saw a post by that person on another site somewhere. But anyway, thank you so much for the nice words. It really makes me feel good that people listen to the show and enjoy it. And I certainly enjoy putting it together. Got a comment from Tom on the website, just counting down to Sterling Gym. He said I should maybe get one of those countdown timers on my website. And I don't know how to do that. I'll have to go find one, and not Tom, and figure out how to put that in as a, I think it's called a widget. That's probably a good idea. Maybe I'll do that. And he was looking at my yearly mileage, and he wanted to know how that compared to my mileage last year at this time. I've been keeping my mileage online just because it adds it up a lot easier, but I think I'd have to go in my running logbook to figure out where I was last year at this time, which is probably less than half what I've done already this year. So, Tom, thanks for for putting that on there. And that he was responding to the Rocks in My Shoes, Bugs in My Computer episode. Also got a nice email from Rich. Rich was the same guy that did the race report. He actually, just a couple other things about Rich. I think his daughter might end up going to college in Virginia, so at some point in time I have a feeling I'm going to be crossing paths with Rich at some point in the future, especially if we both keep running. I wouldn't be surprised if we actually do a run together one of these days in here in Ashland. I don't think I'll be able to make it down to Texas. Although I do have a friend that lives in Dallas that I overdue on a visit. I don't know. We get a group of guys, we might go down there one of these days. And I also got one from Patrick. And Patrick, actually, you know what? I meant to include his race report in this episode. I completely forgot. Patrick, which is a male, I am going to save this for another race report episode. He ran the Shamrock Marathon, and I think it was his first marathon. Not sure. I'm scanning it here. He finished it, did a great job. He got his, it was his first marathon. So I think I'm going to save that for maybe a marathon report episode because he ran the Shamrock Shamrock Full, and that was his first one, and that deserves its own time. I don't want to rush through it. And Patrick, man, forgive me for neglecting that. I put so much stuff in this Yahoo email that I just get lost in cyberspace. So I'm going to save this one, and we'll do that one in its own episode. And Patrick, please forgive me. I will not forget you. Hopefully, you keep listening to the show. He took so much time to write it, so I'm definitely going to take time to read it and go over it and not rush it. So. All right, well, we're getting to the there's the bell there, so we're getting to the point where I'm gonna sign off. I've got the Ashland Railroad Run this weekend, the 10K, and then I'll be running another 24 to go visit my uncle who's in an assisted living home, and I've figured out the mileage on the computer, and then I'm gonna get my wife to pick me up there, and we'll figure out where we're gonna go eat from there. We'll go visit my uncle. He's 93, and this year went into assisted living. Up before that he was living on his own up in D.C. and but now he's down here and going to spend some more senior years and with some people that can help him out a little bit more than he could when he's living by himself. So that's my big plan for the weekend. I'm going to be counting down the days to the Charlottesville Marathon, which is April 18th, and then of course the Sterling Gym Ultra Marathon, which is May 2nd. And then I'll be turning 40 a few days after that. So I've got a big spring planned. And believe it or not, in between all that training and those races, I got to find time to spread mulch in my yard. So anyway, hope y'all have a good week. This is Ashland Dave, and I'm coming at you from the center of the universe, Ashland, Virginia, reminding you to run to the finish and keep on running. Y'all have a good week.
The 2009 Ashland Railroad Run. Join us on Saturday, April 4th, for the 31st running of one of Virginia's oldest road races alongside the tracks and through the historic town of Ashland, Virginia, the center of the universe. This race is one of Virginia's first eco-friendly races and the area's longest running 10K. Special door prizes will be given for those bringing a pair of running shoes to recycle, and a green fair will be held on the lawn of the historic Hanover Arts and Activity Center. Be sure to come to the Center of the Universe too on April 4th and race. For more information, go to www.hanoverarts.org and click under News and Happenings. I ran the kids race last year and it was fun. Run Ashland First. See you there.